Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to San Diego. I hope everyone's been enjoying the sunny weather that we've been having. I know I've been glad to be out of D.C. and how snowy and cold it's been. I always enjoy these conferences and the chance to see some old faces and meet new people in the industry. It's always an exciting time. So during my time today, I would like to provide updates on our industry and all these important events that are going on in D.C. right now. Last year around this time, I stood on a similar stage in a Las Vegas showroom with a tremendous sense of achievement and anticipation. We had just fought a very hard-fought biodiesel volume increase to 1.28 billion gallons, and the ink on the tax incentive was barely dry. We knew we had laid the groundwork for a record-breaking year. We had the strongest policy environment in the history of the biodiesel industry. And today, the results are clear. We produced a record 1.7 billion gallons of clean, renewable biodiesel in 2013. These policies work, and our industry is delivering. However, success in Washington is often a zero-sum game. As the biodiesel industry thrived over the last several years, we awakened a sleeping giant. Our adversary, Big Oil, is one of the most profitable and politically connected industries in the United States. The oil industry spends tens of millions of dollars a year on lobbyists, PR firms, and consultants, all at their disposal to try and undermine biodiesel. I believe this relentless assault by Big Oil on renewables is why today I stand before you with the industry facing one of its greatest challenges ever. Let me assure you, we understand the gravity of this situation. The entire NBB team in Washington and Jefferson City is working overtime to fight back against this threat. Most urgently on EPA's recent volume proposal for biodiesel and advanced biofuels. Through NBB, the biodiesel industry is implementing an aggressive strategy that will give us the best chance to improve this proposal and restore stability to your businesses. Let me recap some of the things that we're doing. Most recently, we harnessed our broad-based support in Congress with letters to the White House urging the EPA to raise the numbers for biodiesel. After a major grassroots and lobbying effort to mobilize our allies on Capitol Hill, we had 54 representatives and 32 senators sign those letters. This is the most support we have ever had. Those letters were bipartisan, and they sent the White House and the EPA a clear signal that Congress is watching this process and that biodiesel has popular support from lawmakers all across the country. We are also working with some of our key supporters in Congress to secure meetings at the White House, where these lawmakers can, for themselves, explain the benefits of biodiesel and how this proposal will be very negative for our industry. These face-to-face meetings between members of Congress and the White House will underscore our own meetings and go a long way towards raising the profile of this issue. We have also beefed up our team in Washington with an impressive group of lobbyists to make sure the administration hears our concerns. We have former members of Congress working on our behalf from both parties, from both the House and the Senate. In fact, we'll hear from two former members of Congress in our next panel discussion. In addition to these former members, we are relying on the professionals we have worked with for years to bend as many ears on Capitol Hill, at the EPA, and in the White House. Additionally, we are working outside the Beltway to identify state and local leaders to advocate for higher volumes. For example, Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, the former chief of staff to President Obama, sent a letter to the White House on our behalf. Well, we're also getting the word out to the media. We've seen biodiesel producers, industry leaders, and even former members of Congress publish op-eds and letters to the editor in newspapers all across the country, calling on the EPA and the White House to raise our volumes. We've seen news stories nationwide illustrating the real-world impact this proposal would have on businesses. We're also working with influential think tanks in Washington who see these issues the way we do, because we believe national security benefits make a powerful argument against this proposal. We are working with a leading national security organization with strong ties to the White House and Democrats on Capitol Hill. This group is leading a petition to the EPA demanding that they raise our numbers for biodiesel. Finally, we are working to generate thousands of unique comments from people all across the U.S. to express their dismay at biodiesel's numbers. I want to thank all of you who have written in on behalf of biodiesel. And for those of you who have not done so, I would urge you to stop by our NBB booth in the convention hall and send your own letter in support of the biodiesel volumes. It's as easy as entering your contact info into the computer to auto-generate a letter. These letters and comments send the EPA a message that American people care about good jobs, protecting our environment, and reducing our dependence on foreign oil. While none of these tactics alone will win the day for biodiesel, combined, they will send the White House and the EPA a clear message. There will be consequences for not raising our volumes. In addition to our work on the RFS, we are engaged on other issues that are critical to our industry. Specifically, the fact that Congress failed to extend tax extenders at the end of last year, including our own blender's tax credit. We've seen some momentum on that recently, and we could see some activity in the upcoming weeks. So we are holding out hope that despite Congress's dysfunction, we can again get our tax incentive extended. Now, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but I want to close by emphasizing that we will not win on these issues alone without your engagement and your direct advocacy. Believe me, as a former congressional staffer, it makes all the difference in the world for congressmen and senators to hear from you directly on these important issues. If we work together and aggressively advocate on our own behalf, we can continue to make a difference and continue these policies that have helped us become the nation's leading advanced biofuel. I look forward to working with all of you to continue biodiesel's success story. Thank you very much. Our next panel discussion will examine how biodiesel businesses can best work within the regulatory framework discussing climate change while charting the industry's future for biofuels. Our panelists are former members of the U.S. government and have always fought for biodiesel throughout their career. Now they're fighting for biodiesel from within as players in our team. No one knows the issues like they do. Our first panelist is former Congressman Kenny Holsoff, Vice Chair for Public Policy at Polsinelli. Throughout his distinguished career, he has served as a leading expert and advocate in energy policy. As a legislator, he championed biofuels incentives, and he is a founder of the Missouri Energy Initiative. Please welcome Congressman Kenny Holsoff. Our next distinguished panelist is former Senator Byron Dorgan, our senior policy advisor, author, and professor. As a House member and in the Senate, Dorgan was a champion for biodiesel and other renewable fuels. He repeatedly sponsored legislation to extend and renew the renewable fuel standard and strongly advocated for the biodiesel tax incentive. Among many other senior advocacy roles, he is a senior fellow at the Bipartisan Policy Center, where he co-chairs the center's energy project and focuses on issues related to energy. Please welcome Senator Byron Dorgan. Wow, thank you all so much for being here. We're very lucky to hear from some of our experts and our new members on our team, such distinguished members. I know that our audience has a lot of questions, and I think you two are going to be the perfect insight to kind of enlighten everybody as to all the intricacies of what goes on in D.C. involving policymaking. And for those of you that are in the audience that you have questions for our folks, thank you. The best way to ask these questions is to text them. There's numbers up there. Please text your questions, and we'll have someone run out the questions, and we can have a good interactive discussion. So why don't we get started? I think one of the questions that's on all of our minds, clearly, is what's going on and with the biodiesel RVOs. We've all heard that the administration has put out this proposal. We're very disappointed that it wasn't the volumes that we wanted. And we're all scratching our heads on, why did this happen? The administration has always supported renewable fuels, especially advanced biofuels, and how are we in this position where we are today, where we're having to fight to get our volumes up again?
Well, Ann, I don't think anybody understands how it's happened or why it's happened. This is really inexplicable to me. The big oil interests have waged war against renewable fuels. They want to destroy the renewable fuels industry if they can. This administration, the Obama administration, has always supported renewable fuels. They will, I assume, say that these mandates still support renewable fuels. But the fact is, they know that these mandates are below what they should be. They have to be adjusted. And look, we should celebrate success, not penalize success. Biodiesel is the advanced fuel at this point that's better for the economy, it's better for energy security, better for fuel diversity. And this administration has a responsibility to see something like this, success in biofuels, and say, we're going to celebrate that, and you know, you want to go, we'll give you your head. You go for more. That's what this ought to be about.
Absolutely.
Preach on, brother. Preach on. I think having grown up in the Midwest and represented a congressional district in the Midwest, it is inexplicable because President Obama, even Senator Obama, as we saw from the video yesterday, has been an ardent supporter of renewables, particularly biofuels. You know, I think that we have gotten, biodiesel has gotten caught up or, you know, caught some shrapnel, if you will, because of the ethanol versus the anti-ethanol forces. Don't underestimate either the 2011 drought. And I think the EPA came under some very intense political scrutiny. That's when you saw a lot of these bills being introduced to repeal the RFS. And so I think all of those things kind of collided, along with interest on the other side of this issue, very moneyed interests that have put us in the situation that we are in now. But it's just the first step, and we've got a long road ahead of us.
Very, very well said. We do have a long road ahead of us. And to help us along that road, since you both are former legislators, what advice do you have for us? What is the best way we can continue to advocate on our own behalf? I think we're all very familiar with the fact that we should write letters and that we should talk to people. But what other advice do you two have for our audience?
Well, first I would say I would applaud what NBB has done so far. You know, I think we can learn from some mistakes. And I think if we look at our brethren in the ethanol industry, and you've got splintered groups, and you've got different messages. You know, I used to be a courtroom lawyer, and the old adage was, don't commit murder when your opponent's committing suicide. And I think what we've seen that in the ethanol industry, that there's not unanimity. And so I tip my cap to what NBB has been doing. You know, the team that you put on the field in Washington, D.C., all of those things are important. But let me underscore the importance that each one of you in this room and beyond have, because ultimately, as the senator and I are very well aware from our time in elective office, you have the power of the vote. And so getting involved, making sure that your voices are heard, whether it's through the formal rulemaking and comment process, whether you see your member of Congress at church, or at the grocery store, it's that grassroots effort along with the orchestrated effort that NBB has put together. This really, you can't just rely upon those in Washington, D.C. I mean, this is something where we all are going to have to roll up our sleeves, and that power that you have as a constituent, now is the time to exercise that power.
Yeah, I think that this isn't a case where we're all in this alone. We're all in this together, and fighting not only big oil, but fighting an EPA mandate that isn't sufficient for this industry. So everybody here ought to make sure they have comments in by January 28th. You can do that, and you should. I mean, don't let January 29th come around and you not having submitted comments. But more than that, almost everybody in this room has the capability of showing up somewhere where your congressman or your senator will be. Or perhaps you know your congressman or senator. And I would call them. I would go there and talk to them, and I would say, you know, look, I invested in a business here. My business is at risk because we're successful. You've always supported this. Now I need you to help me. And always make a specific ask. Say to that person, that congressman, that senator, we're expecting you, I'm expecting you to call the president, call the White House. You know, be a part of this team to change this, because this is just one step, this EPA announcement. It's an important step. But between now and when they make the final decision, we really, really need to get busy. And one final point about preaching. I'm a Lutheran, and we don't really preach very much. In fact, they say an extroverted Lutheran is someone who's looking at the other person's shoes while he's speaking. So I don't preach much.
Just here's one concrete example, and I don't know if someone here in the audience should take credit, but a congressman, a House member, a Republican House member from Virginia has introduced a bill, of course, to completely repeal and eliminate the renewable fuel standard. And there are 72 co-sponsors, and I checked the list this morning. There was a congressman, a Democratic congressman from the state of Pennsylvania, who had initially signed up and put his name to that bill when it was introduced. That congressman has withdrawn his support from that bill. Now, was that as a result of something that someone here in the room or a constituent who, as Senator Dorgan has said, this is affecting our livelihood, to get that member to peel his name off? It doesn't matter, but just because someone has professed or pronounced some support for changing RFS or what have you, again, the power is in your hands. We're here to help you in that regard, but that's just one real example of someone pulling their support, probably because someone here in the room got to that member of Congress and asked them to do that.
And I'm glad you guys brought up what's going on Capitol Hill and the important support that we have there. How do you see this issue playing out, this RFS issue playing out on Capitol Hill? There's been a lot of talk about repealing or revising the RFS. How do you see that going? Do you think that the votes are there? Is the process there? What's your crystal ball for the next 6 months or so and how that might play out for us?
Well, first of all, the Congress is dysfunctional. I mean, it is not able to do very much just because it can't agree on anything.
It wasn't like that when you and I were still there, was it, Senator?
It was not. It was perfect. But it is dysfunctional. And I know there are people who say, let's get rid of the renewable fuel standard. Let's abolish those things. I helped write the first one in 2005 in the energy bill that was signed. I think that would be a horrible mistake. Fortunately, the Congress can't agree on anything, so they're not, in my judgment, they are not going to be able to find a way to repeal it. If they tried to repeal it, this president would veto the bill in any event. So at least for now, we're not threatened, in my judgment, by its repeal. What we are threatened by is putting a ceiling on what we're able to do on renewable fuels. Look, I support oil. I come from the state that's producing 1 million barrels a day. I've always been someone that supports oil and gas. For 100 years, we said, if you go look for oil and gas, we'll give you a big tax break. We love you. Well, that's important. I also support renewable fuels for obvious reasons. And I want the renewable fuels industry to succeed and grow. And we ought not put a ceiling on renewable fuels. We ought to continue to say to renewable fuels, be the biggest you can be. Be the best you can be.
Yeah. You know, one of the challenges is an education effort. You know, you see, you know, the number, especially in the House of Representatives, when we've seen the number of new members over the last, I mean, almost half the Congress, I think, over the last two elections, who didn't have the fight, who didn't go through the 2005 discussion and the Energy Independence and Security Act of 2007. And so it's kind of an education effort on their part. And I've, you know, I've had more than one discussion with a House Republican saying, well, and he says to me, well, we Congress shouldn't pick winners and losers. You know, we should let the market decide. Well, that's great if we had a free market. You know, but Adam Smith left the building long ago as far as, energy is concerned. And so, you know, what we want is a level playing field. I know that seems to be the holy grail in Washington. We just want a level playing field. But truly, we do, don't we? We just want, you know, to be able to compete. And so part of this is just it's a very education, very basic, describing that, you know, that, you know, we don't have engine issues, you know, as far as, you know, biodiesel is concerned. We have multiple feedstocks. You know, all the things that perhaps the ethanol industry has been having to fight and deal with, we don't have any of those issues, you know, as far as specifications and as far as carbon emissions, all of those things. We've got this great story to tell, and yet I think sometimes we sort of just all get lumped together in renewables. And so that's the challenge, is to try to help tell our story and tell it passionately.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, Senator, you had mentioned oil, and domestic oil production has certainly been up. How do you both think that's impacting people's view of renewables or policies on renewables? Are people pulling away because we're finding more domestic oil and natural gas?
Well, it obviously has an impact. I mean, in 2005 and 2007, the world was different. There was a concern about energy over-dependence on foreign oil coming into our country, concern about Hubbard's Peak, that the future was destined to be less oil rather than more oil. And so there was a lot of reason to want to push renewable fuels. Now we are awash in new oil and new natural gas. Clearly, I think some people have decided, well, that's nirvana. We've solved our energy problem. Forget the rest. Of course, that's very short-sighted, and this is not nirvana at all. It's a good story, but we still need, for energy security, for environmental reasons and other reasons, we need to boost a renewable fuels industry. And I think you do as well, support all of it. I support ethanol and support biodiesel, support the advanced fuels of biodiesel and cellulosic. So I think it has had an impact just in terms of there seems to be less urgency in the minds of some people. Not mine. We still have an urgency in pursuing renewable fuels.
You know, Byron's right that in the last discussion, so 6 years, 7 years ago, when the Energy Independence and Security Act, and if you go back and look at the congressional record, which I've done, and you see that the floor speeches, I found one of my own, where it was discussion was national security. And you're exactly right. Back then, we talked about how dependent we were upon other sources. And you know, you had this mantra coming out that we need an all-of-the-above energy strategy. Well, we still need an all-of-the-above energy strategy. And just because that we've got these extraordinary exploration advances and hydraulic fracking, you know, has put us in a different spot, we still have carbon emissions, and we still, you know, need to have that diversification. There were some other assumptions we made back in 2005 and 2007, and that would be that the demand for transportation fuels would increase. Well, we've seen that that's moderated and declined in some regard. So even with that changing dynamic, the policy that the underpinnings of the 2005-2007, the RFS, the tax credit, are as compelling today as they were back then. And so it's an incumbent on all of us to try to keep telling that story. With all the great things happening in your home state and beyond, that's great. We tip our caps, but we still need that strong all-of-the-above strategy, including biodiesel.
I couldn't agree
more. There's a Latin phrase that we could all use that describes that. I went to a small high school and didn't take Latin, but I've used it. It's called totus porcus, which means whole hog. I'm for all of it. Anyway, just a thought.
I need to work on my Latin, I think.
Yeah.
Well, let's switch gears a little bit. Obviously, another issue that's very important to our industry is the biodiesel tax incentive. When you were both on Capitol Hill, you were both very important advocates of the biodiesel tax incentive. And as you all know, unfortunately, it expired at the end of last year. What do you see the future for tax extenders, tax reform? How are things playing out? Clearly, we're very much in favor of having a tax incentive extended, but I think the timing is very uncertain. If you look in your crystal ball, what do you see for that?
Well, Anne, you know, you and your team pulled a rabbit out of the hat, as you talked about, I mean, at the end of the last year. And it is, you've done a really terrific job on working these issues. It's sad that those who are running a business find themselves in a circumstance where the Congress doesn't provide any predictability about the future. It's kind of stutter, stop, start on these tax incentives, and you can't really rely on them at this point. I think that the tax extenders, most of them, perhaps not all, but most of them, and the ones we're concerned about in this room, will be extended. The question is when. I don't know when. We have a new member of the Finance Committee assuming the chairmanship very soon. But they will be extended in my judgment. My hope is it is sooner rather than later. And I think it's unfair to all of you doing business out there for the Congress not to do this on a timely basis and not to do it for a slightly longer period of time. I think we should be talking about 3 and 5 year increments when we're talking about policy, so there's some predictability and consistency for those that are doing business in this country.
I concur, especially with Senator Max Baucus, soon to be the ambassador overseas, and then Ron Wyden, senator from
Montana. Oregon.
Oregon. Assuming the chairmanship on finance, You know, on the House side, it's been interesting because there's been a lot of discussion about fundamental tax reform. And so tax extenders took a back seat to this larger discussion. Well, now that we see, you know, the pragmatists in the House see that tax reform is not likely to happen. There's still going to be some good discussion and debate about fundamental reform and lowering rates and all of those things. But hopefully now, I think, especially with Senator Wyden assuming the chairmanship on the Finance Committee and the Senate side, we're going to see a renewed interest, I think, in the tax extenders. And I concur, as far as certainty in your industry, having the tax credit here today, gone tomorrow, coming back, is it seamless? You know, what do you do with all the transactions and investments you've made in the interim? Not a way to run a railroad, but more importantly, let's hope that we get this extension and that they do make it retroactive and seamless.
Absolutely. Our next question is for you, Congressman. There are clearly some opposition among Republicans, particularly House Republicans, to renewables and renewable policies. What would you say is the best way to approach them and try to win them over?
One thing I would point out at the outset is that when it comes to the politics of energy, it's not necessarily a red jersey, blue jersey kind of contest. You know, when you think, for instance, Senator Mary Landrieu from the state of Louisiana is a strong advocate for oil and gas. And so Senator Manchin in West Virginia is a strong coal senator. And so it doesn't necessarily lend itself to Republicans versus Democrats. However, we have had some challenges with some of the House Republicans. And again, I sort of hearken back to the discussions that I've already been having, young members who weren't around as we had these discussions about the renewable fuel standard in 05 and then again in 07, and this education effort. And so it's an effort that I continue to take on. Hopefully you will assist back home. I think that there's this, this hardline ideology among some that we shouldn't have mandates, we shouldn't have incentives, and yet then let's put everything on the table in all industries. And so it's just an education effort. And sometimes it's very frustrating. Sometimes it's very successful and very fruitful, but you got to get engaged. I mean, ultimately, if we're the David versus the Goliath, it's time that we, grab our rocks and our slingshot and off we go, and that's the effort that we all have to take.
And I think that's really well said, and look, there are some mandates that really improve our country and are necessary. I support mandates that we believe moves this country in the right direction. And on the question of picking winners and losers, I'm all for picking winners. And I think we've done that with respect to biodiesel and renewable fuels. And I want to amplify one additional thing, if I might. And that is, I read the account of the speech given yesterday by your president, which I thought was an excellent speech. And the point that he made is a point probably worth ending on. And that is, biodiesel, this is a big room and a lot of people. But, the biodiesel industry really requires it to be together. The strength is in being together, in confronting, number one, an oil industry that wants to destroy what you're doing. Second, an administration that's come up short on the volume mandates and so on. The strength you have, all of you, in different ways, is working together to try to get to the promised land here and what we want for biodiesel. And so I think his message is right on point.
I guess my final comment would be that, the Super Bowl is coming up and it's great, and the GMs for those respective teams have fielded a team on the field and they've picked different players to fulfill roles. And certainly, and what you've done and Joe and others as far as I looked at the Federal Affairs panel yesterday and you had every base covered and recalcitrant House Republicans and I'm in the fight, Senator Dorgan doing the same thing with the administration and with the Senate. But ultimately, all of us have to play the game. And so, once again, I challenge you. Our mission, whether you're Catholic or Lutheran, is to evangelize and seek and save the lost. We need your help to help seek and save the lost and tell this story because it's a tremendous positive story for the country. not just for your industry, but for the country. And yet, we need to have your voice helping us tell that story. I, for one, am up for that challenge, and I know Senator is as well. And certainly, NBB is doing all they can do. We need your help.
Yeah, I think one, you're asking for opportunity. You know what you can do. The country knows what you will do. You're asking for opportunity. This is the land of opportunity. So we're not going hat in hand to the president or hat in hand to anybody saying, give us some help here. We're asking for the opportunity to do what we know you can do for this country's future.
Well, I think that's a very strong note to leave it on. I want to thank you both for joining us and being such strong, wonderful advisors to our industry. We all benefit from your great counsel. So thank you very much. Let's give them a round of applause.
Thank you.